Ameritech Property Management. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've got two dogs crapping on my lawn. One of them is as big as a house.
Ameritech Property Management.
Okay, so my house smells like something out of a horror movie. It's like something
died. You guys sent me a violation notice in the mail.
Everything.
It says my lawn is unsightly. What the hell is that?
If you guys think that you're going to take my house, you got another thing coming. You're going to put a lien on my house for $20?
That's right. Everything you ever wanted to know about condominium living or deed-restricted communities. Good afternoon and welcome to the Ameritech Connection radio talk show on the TAN Talk Radio Network. Do you live in a condo or deed-restricted community? Do you have issues concerning the do's and the don'ts in your community? Have you been getting into trouble with your community association or management company? Got questions but just can't get the answers? Well, we cover it all and much more right here and right now on the Ameritech Connection. Hi, I'm Mike Perez, the CEO of Ameritech Property Management and your host for the Ameritech Connection. And sitting right next to me is my co-host, the beautiful and talented Miss Sharon Van Winkle. Sharon is also the Director of Marketing for Ameritech Property Management and has over 10 years of experience dealing with these, at times, very difficult situations. So with that in mind and without further ado, here's Sharon.
Thanks, Mike. We have an exciting one-hour show for you here today, so please keep listening and call us with your questions because we have all the answers. The local number is 727-441-3000. That is 727-441-3000. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-866-826-1340. Again, that's 1-866-826-1340. Did you know that Ameritech Property Management manages over 25,000 homes in the Tampa Bay area? And that means we have a lot of experience dealing with a lot of different issues. We've been managing condominium and deed-restricted communities for over 20 years, and now we've decided to host our own radio talk show to discuss and educate you, our listeners, on the do's and the don'ts regarding community living. Oh yeah, not to mention the crazy and off-the-wall stories you're hear only on the Ameritech Connection radio talk show.
Good evening, Tampa Bay. It's Ted Corliss, not Sharon or Mike. Mike and Sharon have taken some much-needed vacation time and headed with Pappy's back pension out to Vegas and see how they do. My name is Ted Corliss. I've been colleagues of Mike and Sharon for several years now. I'm a lawyer, and my passion in life is suing insurance companies. But tonight, we're going to have the incredible opportunity to hear from Byron Anderson from SEI, an engineering firm. We're going to talk a lot about some of the big issues that are showing up in the news right now, namely many of the things that are going on in Puerto Rico, and talk about some of the issues associated with much of the hurricane damage Florida has been through. But then we're going to turn our story towards some of the issues going on with sinkholes in the news, primarily because that's one of the things that I spend a majority of my time doing, which is bringing insurance companies to task for denied sinkhole claims. But at the same time, there's a lot of things going on in the news right now about sinkholes that we hope are going to influence some of the legislative committee hearings that are going to be taking place as of October 9th. Sinkholes need a new look by a lot of those legislators, and we want to bring up some of those issues. These are issues that have been especially important to so many of the listeners that follow Mike and Sharon, and we appreciate the time that they spend on their show, and we're going to see what we can do tonight. So let me begin by introducing Byron Anderson. Byron, what did we just go through?
We just went through an incredible series of natural disasters that have affected portions of the United States, starting with the hurricane in Texas, Irma that came up here through Florida, and then we have Maria that has devastated Puerto Rico and other parts of the Caribbean. And from an engineering perspective, I think it's important to understand that many of the ideas and models that we have associated with the prediction of the magnitude of storms is based on historical data. And with the climate change that is occurring from a warming of the sea and rising of the sea levels, that data is going to become obsolete. And we as engineers are concerned that we may be designing structures, or I should say under-designing structures, for events that are actually much larger than what we have ever imagined or anticipated. And wow. I think that the scale of devastation that we see in Puerto Rico is a testament to that concern.
Well, before we jump right into any individual storm, because the one that I'm especially interested in tonight is the state of affairs in Puerto Rico, that I understand they have just recently been able to get resources and individuals there to help and provide support for so many families. And I know so many people in the Tampa Bay area have connections to Puerto Rico and are just recently been able to communicate with them. We're so very happy to hear that while it's been a very frightening situation, it could have been considerably worse. Now, before we jump in, Byron, give us a benefit of a little bit of experience, your background a little bit.
Sure. I've been working in the structural engineering field since about 1989, and my first real experience with natural disasters was Hurricane Andrew, where I spent the better part of a year in South Dade and Homestead and Florida City area, helping to investigate damages associated with hurricane and the reconstruction of those properties. And then I've been involved in every major hurricane event since that time. And I've also been instrumental in the redesign or redevelopment of structural designs following Hurricane Andrew and making sure that we're making buildings that are stronger and are able to withstand these disasters.
You know, I think one of the things that I want to add to that is that I know so many people, me included, talked about making decisions about whether or not to leave the area. I did. I vacated. We hopped on three tickets to Chicago. They don't allow hurricanes in Chicago. It's against union rules. And the reality was, it's not so much that the state of, like, Tampa Bay, for example, that it fared well in the storm. It's simply that the storm that they thought was going to come here didn't come. And instead it went to Naples, just like it went to Port Charlotte back in 2004 when Hurricane Charlie went through. Because I spend so much time dealing with insurance claims, you know, property insurance claims, I went down there 36 hours after the storm, and it literally looked as if someone had dropped a nuclear bomb down there. And tell me a little bit about what's going on in Puerto Rico right now structurally.
Structurally, there's mass failures of communications. There's mass failures of infrastructure. Of particular concern now is the wastewater treatment facilities with a lack of sufficient electricity and a lack of facilities to be able to get the wastewater treatment operations back up. Then very soon you're going to start having outbreaks of diseases,
right,
and
waterborne stuff, a true
humanitarian crisis. I think that from my perspective and living in Florida my whole life, is that I'm not as concerned about the day of a hurricane as I am the days and weeks or months, or in the cases of Puerto Rico, potentially years after the hurricane, and what it's going to do to us from a humanitarian perspective, potential loss of additional lives, right. Certainly some uncomforts. But in Puerto Rico, we're concerned about just getting the basics, getting fresh water, getting
right
sanitary food, and being able to deal with the waste.
I mean, I know that they didn't even have the ability to have a radar system to permit them to land or take off aircraft until very recently. So they were having to literally treat it as if it was a war zone, because
correct,
essentially it was. And you have individuals that have been isolated. I mean, think about the story that we had on the East Coast involving the nursing home where so many people had died because of exposure to the elements. But if you put that in the context of an area that has it's not as developed, obviously, as Florida is, and it didn't necessarily have the pre-planning down there to deal with those issues. I understand that just today the president signed an order that allows for some changes regarding how materials can be delivered there by modifying the Johnson Act. The Johnson Act is an act that requires you to go to one particular port before you can visit any other U.S. port. And that's been lifted, so now they're going to be able to bring resources in then as well. But in the long term, do you think this should be an opportunity for places that are hit strong like that, like Puerto Rico or Naples, to start revisiting how we're building structures in a modern America, where we have, like you pointed out, the weather is different, our assumptions are different?
Absolutely. My preliminary information after being in Marco Island and Naples following Hurricane Irma, We have a contract to look at certain government buildings. I really can't say which ones, but
I understand.
To look at certain government buildings and make sure that they're structurally sound so that they can reopen. So we're pretty much having to go to ground zero as soon as possible to get these facilities back open. And the preliminary information that I'm getting from these areas is that what we call post-Andrew or modern construction, those buildings and residential houses and such built after 1992 fared much better than the older structures. And I think that generally that is the case, is that these new regulations that we have put in place since Hurricane Andrew have created structures that are better able to resist the forces of the wind and the wind-driven rain associated with a hurricane. However, my experience tells me that since we've had such a lull in storms, significant storms, from the Hurricane Charlie years to this year, is that there's been a big push in the through the legislature and through other bodies to actually roll back some of the requirements that were instituted as part of Hurricane Andrew changes to the code. So What that means is that anytime we make a code more strict, that means the building is going to be stronger. It's also going to cost more money.
Right. Premiums are going to, but also maybe premiums for insurance for those buildings would come down.
Correct.
Because one of the things, and I can say this as a property insurance lawyer, what we saw happen was everyone was so focused on premium because they felt that if they could get the premiums to work for both the insureds and the insurers, more insurance companies would come to the state of Florida. Instead, what happened is now we have a public insurance company trying to fill the gap, and I'm no fan of Citizens, and I don't think they're any fan of mine. But I think the issue was we needed to start looking at the insurance policies, because we were running models the other day on some of the properties we're looking at. And if you own a home in the Tampa Bay area in the $300,000 range, let's just take that as an assumption, and that's a very expensive home. It's more than the average, but there are thousands of homes in the Tampa Bay area that are $300,000. For that particular home, you can expect, if you had taken a direct hit from this storm, and this is what I mean by direct hit. Nothing sophisticated. I'm talking about your roof comes off and your screen cage comes off. Before the insurance company will pay you one dime, your deductible and your exclusions probably put you in about a $45,000 loss range before a dollar kicks in for your coverage. And that's because so many of the regulators on insurance policies were so focused on keeping the premiums down, they didn't realize the insurance companies were essentially scaling back the coverage while at the same time doubling the premiums. And so now we're going to see those insurance policies in Naples and see those Citizens policies that excluded virtually everything and have huge deductibles. And for many of the people who can't get insurance elsewhere, Citizens also happens to be the most expensive one on the list. It's just a horrible situation. And I'm hoping some of the politicos are going to start picking that back up, especially given the amount of storm activity we've had. What do you want to see for the state of Florida moving forward in terms of changes in the way we build our buildings?
Well, I think that a lot of the changes that we made after Hurricane Andrew were very good. One of the things that I have said ever since going to Miami after Hurricane Andrew, and it's played out through every major storm event that I've been through, is that we spend a lot of time and effort creating stricter building codes, but we do not spend a lot of time or effort in making sure that those building codes are adequately enforced. So it does little good to write a regulation into a building code if we don't have the resources and the experienced people out on the street looking over the construction to make sure that it's being done appropriately. So I think that I would like to see less and less turning back of the building codes that has been going on for the past couple code cycles. And I would like to see more effort put into the oversight associated with those building codes.
Well, I know personally, I own a home that was constructed in 1999. And so it came after Andrew, but it came before the 2001 changes to the Florida Building Code. And I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, wasn't that the building code that created the hurricane tie downs where you tie the roof line down, or was that in existence before?
No, that's actually a misnomer.
The
requirement to tie down buildings has been in the building code probably since the 1940s or 1950s. Wind loads have been in the building codes since the inception of those codes. But again, what was happening is that in particular for residential structures, the oversight and connecting the dots, if you will, from what's written in the building code to actually what gets constructed was missing.
I understand.
What they did do with the inception of the Florida Building Code is they made a code that was combined aspects of the South Florida Building Code and the Standard Building Code to create a unified document. And they did some great things as far as like creating windborne debris regions, missile impact requirements.
So did you say missile impact?
Missile impact. When I say missile, okay. airborne debris.
I understand.
Not missile impact. So.
Oh, I know. I've heard some missile stories. I recall during the 2004 and 2005 storm season. Doesn't seem to be as much of an issue this time, but window air conditioning units killed a lot of people flying through the air. You know, I understand. Now, you talked a little bit earlier about the issue of many of our models are designed around certain assumptions regarding how high the water could get to those particular properties on the coastline. Are our assumptions about how bad the flood could be wrong? I mean, is the storm surge, because the storm surge here was such a big part of what we were concerned about, but then it ended up being almost in reverse. The water went away, but it didn't come back.
Sure. Can you? Well, I'll just give you a case that I'm working on this morning.
Good.
As a matter of fact, it's a house in Jacksonville, and it's in a flood zone. The flood zone is AE5, which means they're anticipating, based on the FEMA flood map, that you will have a maximum flood depth of 5 feet. The finished floor of the house is at about 6.4 feet. So they're 1.4 feet above the base flood elevation for their finished floor. During Irma, they had about an 8-foot flood event. So even though they had a compliant building and was above what the design flood was supposed to be, they still ended up with several feet of water in their house and complete and utter destruction.
Well, that would mean then that if they were to go back and rebuild it exactly as it had been built before, it would have been it would be compliant.
Correct.
Yet if the same storm happened next season, the house would be eliminated again.
It would be eliminated again, and to further complicate it or to exaggerate what we're talking about is there are new FEMA flood maps that are coming out. And the preliminary maps that are in the final approval stages, they're past any sort of appeal or comment period, actually lowers the elevation of the design flood for that property to 4 feet. So that's what I'm talking about, is that we're relaxing some regulations when we should be looking at doing the opposite.
Right.
And considering that there are sea level rises that are occurring and these storm events are going to become more frequent and larger, and we need to consider that moving forward. So,
all right. So let's address the people in the community that may have, they may be property owners in the state of Florida, either a condominium or a garden home or their individual dwellings, whatever. If they don't live here all the time, what are you saying to those people to do today? It's X number of days after we had the storm activity. What are you recommending for them?
Well, there's two things that I'm concerned about. The first being that if you are an absentee owner, meaning that if you have a property that was in the path of a hurricane and you have not visited that property or somebody has not visited that property, you need to go to that property and access it and go inside, because from the outside it may appear that there's no damage whatsoever, but you may have gotten wind-driven rain coming through doors and windows and openings in the building that aren't seen, that created a water damage scenario inside of your condo or inside of your unit or your house, whatever it may be. And so getting boots on the ground and getting somebody to go in and inspect that structure to make sure that it's not in an active water damage scenario is critical.
It's almost as because your condo would become like a water balloon because the water goes in, but it doesn't come out.
That's correct.
And you may have your air set a little bit higher than usual to save on expenses, but at the same time, that makes you more susceptible to mold growth.
Correct. So what we're most concerned is that we don't want, if you get the water damage in, you want to get it dried out as soon as possible so that you can stem off the effects of possible mold. And so if we have a structure that gets water damaged and then it stays vacant for a period of time, then the problem just magnifies itself over time. That's the first thing that concerns me. The second thing would be is that I would like for building owners and unit owners to understand that just because you did not see water damage associated with the hurricane does not mean that some damage to the building did not occur that would create inlet for water to occur and subsequent rain events. So I think it's important for owners to be diligent as we go through the next several months, 6 months or so, to make sure that every significant rain event, you walk around and look for signs of water damage in your structure, because as you know, there's only a limited amount of time in which you can report your claim. And it's important from a homeowner's perspective that you have to minimize and mitigate your losses.
And let me say that too before, as we end on the conversation about storm damage, and that is that if in doubt, if you see damage, it's imperative that you notify your insurance company, and I recommend you do that in some form of writing so that there's no question about when you reported it, because so many of the insurance claims right now that have been reported have yet to even be investigated. When we come back in the second segment, we're going to talk about some of the news that's been hitting sinkholes, specifically with some of the catastrophic things going on in the community. But it's been my pleasure here with the Ameritech Connection, with Mike and Sharon being off in Las Vegas, Nevada, having a great time. But invite you to visit our websites. I'm Corliss Barfield, CorlessBarfield.com, or Byron's website at SEI.com.
SEI Florida.
SEIFlorida.com. Thank you very much. And when we come back, more with Byron.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
At Corliss Barfield, we spent decades representing some of the most powerful insurance companies in America. Now we only represent individuals with troubled insurance claims or whose families have suffered as a result of personal injury. Battling insurance companies is our business. Look for our faces in front of juries all across America, not on cheesy billboards. Corliss Barfield Trial Group, where battling insurance companies is our business and business is good. Give us a call today.
877-517-5595 or visit us on the web at CorlissBarfield.com.
Mitchell Insurance Services has been providing superior insurance coverage and outstanding customer service since 1971. We specialize in the unique insurance needs of community associations and homeowners associations all across the state of Florida. Contact us today for a free policy assessment to ensure you have the right coverage and are getting the credits that you deserve. Contact us today at 727-360-8190 or visit us online at MitchellInsuranceFL.com. Insuring your community since 1971.
Don't stress it. Call Innovative Roofing. We handle all projects from minor repairs to re-roofing, as well as new installations. We pride ourselves for both quality and reliability, working hard to build lasting relationships with our clients. Innovative Roofing, building a reputation for being a company who makes a difference. Give us a call today, 813-909-0400. Again, that number is 813-909-0400.
Allegiance Development is a family-owned and operated business offering quality general contracting services in the greater Tampa Bay area. We offer a wide range of services including commercial and residential construction, permitting, community stormwater management and repair, asphalt paving and maintenance, concrete restoration, disaster recovery, and much more. Our commitment and dedication applies to all projects, large or small. We have the expertise to offer fast and affordable solutions for all of your general contracting needs. Feel free to contact us at 727-584-1370 or visit our website at allegiancedevelopment.us.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello there, it's Ted Corliss again on the Ameritech Connection, substituting tonight for Mike and Sharon, who are in Las Vegas, Nevada. We are sitting here tonight talking with Byron Anderson. Byron is a professional engineer, has been involved in this exercise since 1989, and we've been talking a lot about the various storm activity, Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Maria, and some of the really serious things that are going on right now in Puerto Rico. But I want to change the conversation now, Byron, to talk a little bit about sinkholes, because that's something that's a little bit more in my backyard, both physically and professionally, I guess.
Well, let's hope not.
Well, we hope we don't have sinkholes in the backyard. But, you know, before we broke, we were talking about the fact that, you know, it's so great to see so many properties being built in the state of Florida. You know, new home construction is up so very much. And that's such a positive thing. But at the same time, we have to recognize that we have to take care of those properties. We have to be able to buy affordable, valuable insurance for them. But we're seeing so many issues right now in the news associated with sinkhole failures, where people are going out and attempting to repair sinkhole activity, and then super bizarre things happen. We can segue that with the loss in Land O'Lakes. What can you tell us about what happened up there?
It's Mother Nature.
Mother Nature.
And we are just man, I would say, is our first rule of thumb here. And
we can build wherever we want. That just doesn't mean she's going to let us keep it there.
That's right. And you don't want to make the lady mad, as it would be. Right. So what happened is that we were actually able to pull historical aerials of that site dating back to the 1940s.
You're talking about aerial photographs?
Yes, okay. Aerial photographs of that property and the surrounding properties dating back to the 1940s. And you can pretty clearly see that there are these complex karst features, a.k.a. old sinkholes, that are directly in the vicinity of the property that fell on Ocean Pines Drive, I believe it was.
Up in Land O'Lakes.
Yes. And so what happened is that through the land development phase, they altered the land to create more canals and more lakefront property in the Lake Pageant Estates area, which is where this was at, and ultimately covered over one of these ancient karst features or ancient sinkholes, and then constructed the houses on top of it. And then some years later, 2011 to be specific, we were called in, my company was called to look at one of the two houses that were the first two to collapse into the sinkhole. And we went out and thankfully, makes me sleep well at night, we determined that the house was structurally damaged. And I think we will talk a little bit more about that. There's two components to a sinkhole loss.
Right.
That you must have structural damage as now defined in the Florida statutes, and you must have sinkhole activity, which is a geologic condition.
And those are the two things, the two elements that have to be present before an insurance company will pay to repair the sinkhole activity.
That is correct. That is correct. And so my company went out in 2011. We found structural damage, thankfully. And right. Then
you didn't want your name on that one.
No, absolutely not. Right. And it's never a good feeling as an engineer when you get the call that, hey, you were out at that property that collapsed in 2011. So we determined it was structurally damaged. The property was assigned over to another geotechnical engineering firm that investigated the property, and ultimately they determined that there was a sinkhole loss present at the property, meaning that there was both structural damage and sinkhole activity, and made certain recommendations to repair the property, to stabilize the land and building and repair the foundation.
Got it.
And ultimately, the owner of the property elected to do a alternate repair than what was recommended by the engineer that was selected by the insurance company. And that alternate repair was approximately $100,000 less than what the initial repair was now.
But let me ask you something about the difference. So the difference was financial, but what about the actual method of repair that was used to stabilize it? Was it the same method or was it a modified plan?
No, it was a modified method, meaning that there's really several different, I call them tools in my toolbox, methods that we use to stabilize a building that is being affected by sinkhole activity. We can grout using compaction grout, and doing so we drill pipes down.
And the grout you're talking about is a kind of liquid concrete?
Yes, it's a concrete that
flowable
concrete.
Right, you can pour it.
So we drill pipes down to the surface of the limestone, then we start injecting this grout under pressure, and the purpose of it is to seal off the limestone, fill voids that may be present, and to also compact soil.
Shut down the sinkhole activity.
Correct. You want to fill the hole from the bottom up, essentially. There may be other conditions present at the site that necessitate underpinning, which is essentially taking a building that is originally constructed on a shallow spread foundation and converting it to a pile foundation. And then finally, chemical grouting is also something that's typically used to treat shallow soils. Okay. In the case of the Land O'Lakes sinkhole, the house was only underpinned. And in doing so, they did not address the karst activity or the sinkhole conditions that were deeper. Now, I want to be clear for the record and state that I don't know that if the house was grouted in accordance with the original engineer's recommendations that we still would not have had a collapse occur.
Right, because this was an extraordinary,
extraordinary claim,
sure.
But what I would say is that I think that if it was grouted, it may not have been as bad. And I also want to add another aspect associated with this is that I wouldn't say that I predicted the Land O'Lakes sinkhole would occur, but I did predict that we would have an active season for sinkhole development in this region simply because we had such a long period of drought and such a severe drought during the spring.
Right.
And so what happens is when we get these droughts followed by the onset of the rainy season, then you get a lot of groundwater movement that is occurring, and that groundwater movement ultimately triggers these events to become catastrophic.
And we because when you look at the visual, and we on my YouTube channel, Corliss Barfield YouTube channel, we have a copy of the video of the house collapsing, and it literally looks like the entire front of the home, what just looks like it turned into oatmeal. I mean, it just, it's bubbling up and it's just gooey. It's like quicksand or something. And that, where did all that water come from?
Well, there's a lake not too far away.
And this is where the aerial photo showed the lake has been there long before they constructed these homes there.
Correct. And the groundwater table was probably in the neighborhood of 4 to 5 feet in that area. So that's groundwater. And then the hole opened up. And so you imagine this mass of earth and the building components going down into this liquid void. It's void that's liquid filled. And then what happens is that liquid just bubbles back up, creating this this mix of building materials, sewage, and soil.
Right, because I know they tested the water and they found a bunch of nasty stuff in the water.
Well, they had septic. Those houses were on septic tanks, and the septic tanks went down with the houses.
All right, well then, I think a lot of what people are wanting to understand is how can you have an engineering report that says in order to get a permit to complete these repairs, you have to do X, Y, and Z, and then the insured is able to walk in and take the money that they're given and do the repair however they elect to because they were able to find an engineer who would sign off on it. I think what that communicates to me is a need for there to be some level of disclosure associated with whatever decision you've made in terms of repairing your home. You know, but I think a lot of people know now that before you buy a home, it's imperative to check the public record and to make specific requests of the county authorities regarding the history of your home. Is this a home that's near an area where there has been confirmed sinkhole activity? Is the home ever been investigated for sinkhole activity, even if no evidence of sinkhole activity was ever found? But we have these legislative rules associated with this 2011 statute that governs sinkhole activity. Is it time we really deconstructed that statute?
I believe so, yes.
Well, what are you looking for in terms of, you know, communicating to a legislator or somebody who would speak to a legislator about what is really missing in all of the dozens of pages that they now have as regulatory authority?
Well, I think that what my biggest concern is that just like what happened in Land O'Lakes is that we investigate a house, and thankfully I did determine that the house was structurally damaged, but I assure you that there are many people in my industry and in this industry that would have looked at the house and said it's not structurally damaged.
Meaning that at that point, the insurance company would have closed their book. They wouldn't even have looked for sinkhole activity, and then they would have moved on.
They would have moved on, and then there would have been absolutely no warning that this, or no idea that this was going to happen in the future. So it's what concerns me is that we have set up a system with the need for structural damage to be a component of a sinkhole loss, in which there are instances in which a property owner finds out that they have sinkhole activity and that sinkhole activity is affecting their building or their property. However, it has not affected it to a point in which the insurance company is going to provide funds to repair the property, and so it's going to continue to manifest itself and get worse and worse over time.
Well, and then what happens too, and we see this, the insurance company hires an engineering firm, the same engineering firm, repetitively, and they have, you know, we're aware of one, I think, where one of the engineers bragged that they deny 97% of the damage investigations that they perform, which of course is very appealing to a lot of insurance companies. But then the problem is, after they deny the insured's claim, they come to us and we give the file to a more reputable engineer, someone who is more balanced in terms of representing not just large insurance companies, but also working with policyholders or construction companies, like, you know, the more appropriate. I'm not judging it, but it's just the idea that there's no question that some of these engineering firms are going out and they're giving overly conservative opinions because it saves their client money, and they do that over and over and over, and it's very economically satisfying to them to do that.
Yes, I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but I would imagine that there's a large percentage of claims that are denied that the homeowners just never question the findings from the engineer, and there's only a few of those that actually make it through to fight, and the insurance companies have probably done a calculation and determine that it's more economically feasible for them to fight the few and than it is to get real answers.
And I can give you an example of that. If you go to our website, corlissbarfield.com or sinkholedamageblog.com, and we have photographs of a home where you will see a large suburban in about, I think it was 16 feet underground. And when that original claim was submitted to Citizens, even though the house had been condemned and there was a half-inch crack running right down the middle of the house, breaking it in two parts, Citizens denied the claim, and it was in Ocala. They denied the claim because they said there was no structural damage, although there was a hole in the front yard that had a Suburban in it. And that's an example of one of the things that we see a lot of, which is insurance companies attempting to take advantage of their purported narrow interpretations of some of the statutes or some of the policy language, and leaving insureds with 36-foot wide holes in their front yards that have a Suburban in them. And when we talk to insurance companies about remedying these issues, what we get back is the instruction that across the board, no laws will be changed affecting insurance companies if by any chance it raises the premiums. But we face the fact that many of the premiums are too expensive for the quality of the insurance products that are being sold. But again, the biggest thing we can do is communicate to our legislators about our need for affordable, valuable insurance coverage that will protect us. So those of you out there who have suffered a loss associated with some of the hurricane activity recently, it's important that you use your resources to reach out to legislators and to talk to them about your situation. And I know they want to hear from you. I've talked to a lot of them, and they're working diligently to help their constituents all over the state of Florida. Again, I'm Ted Corliss. This is the Ameritech Connection. We're here with Byron Anderson. We'll be right back after this break.
This
is the Tantalk Radio Network.
At Corliss Barfield, we spent decades representing some of the most powerful insurance companies in America. Now, we only represent individuals with troubled insurance claims or whose families have suffered as a result of personal injury. Battling insurance companies is our business. Look for our faces in front of juries all across America, not on cheesy billboards. Corliss Barfield Trial Group, where battling insurance companies is our business and business is good. Give us a call today.
877-517-5595 or visit us on the web at corlissbarfield.com.
Hey, Frank, thanks for inviting us to the pool party.
What is that?
Oh, my pool? Yeah, I'm going for a natural Florida wildlife kind of thing.
Frank, no, man, you gotta call Gulfside Pools.
Daddy, watch me!
Jimmy, stop playing on that alligator.
Oh, it's not that bad.
Frank, it's bad. Gulfside does pool cleaning and repairs for commercial or residential. With over 50 years experience, they'll make your pool look, well, like a pool again. Call 813-626-3539. 813-626-3539. Or go to their website, gulfsidepools.com.
Whether it's an act of nature or a burst pipe, a large loss can cause significant damage followed by an overwhelming process. Trinicon has the experience and expertise to provide a stress-free approach to restoring your community back to its pre-existing condition, allowing you to focus on other priorities. Our goal is to return you to the comfort of your home as quickly as possible while maintaining the highest standards of excellence. Trinicon is a licensed contractor, roofing contractor, and mold remediator. Call 1-888-521-5667. 1-888-521-5667 or visit us at TriniconLLC.com.
When you need legal help, you want a lawyer you can trust, someone with experience, knowledge, wisdom, and compassion. At Pilk & Associates, we pride ourselves at providing you with the personal attention and consideration your legal issues deserve. We can help plan long-term goals for your family or your business and handle unexpected legal issues that arise suddenly. We're a full-service law firm with nearly 3 decades of legal experience. We are dedicated to serving your legal needs. Please call for a free consultation
at 813-759-3285 or feel free to email us at law@pilka.com. We look forward to serving your legal needs.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello there. Last section here for the Ameritech Connection. It's Ted Corliss talking to Byron Anderson. Mr. Anderson is a very experienced licensed engineer in the state of Florida. We've been talking about so much of the storm activity that took place. And our last segment, we talked about much of the reporting that's been going on because Mr. Anderson was involved in one of the original investigations in the Land O'Lakes sinkhole that got so much attention several weeks ago when it literally collapsed. Before our very eyes. Right now, Byron, the legislative committees in Tallahassee are gathering October 9th, and they had originally been scheduled to be there, but it was canceled for the storm. I'd like to send a message to them in terms of some of the things that they need to be examining, and I'm going to propose one, and I'm going to ask you to propose one as well. And here's the issue that I'd like them to deal with. In the insurance coverage that's provided right now, insurance companies can deny sinkhole claims based exclusively on the threshold of the damage that has occurred at the property. Yet we're seeing homeowners, and I've represented several of these people, who have enormous holes that have opened up either in front of or underneath their homes, but because the homes have not finally collapsed, those particular claims can be denied because the coverage says they must have collapsed, and that's using it in past tense. Many of the privately held insurance companies, you know, I think the really quality brand of insurance companies, like State Farm is a great brand of insurance company. Those particular insurance companies, if they got that claim, they would pay it, no question. But Citizens, on the other hand, likes to play as technically as they can because they pretend everything they do is to protect the interests of the Florida taxpayer, as opposed to the individual that bought a product from them. I'd like to see the requirement that allows engineers like you to look at those claims and say, you know what, it's imminent. It's not, it hasn't happened, but it's imminent. And that's something that I'd like, I think someone is going to be presenting to the Banking and Insurance Committee, and I've had a conversation with several of the legislators. Do you have anything in particular you'd like to suggest?
Yes, I would like to actually go to the other side of the equation, and I would like to see changes associated with development of properties and construction of buildings. And in particular, we have known for hundreds of years that sinkholes and sinkhole activity are a phenomena that is common to, in particular, this area of Florida. However, if you own 40 acres of land, you don't want to know if there's sinkholes on that land because it devalues the property.
Which is, you know, the truth about that is that I think that most 40 acre properties in the state of Florida, you're probably going to find at least one sinkhole on it unless you're really south.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Right. And so they go to permit their plat map, right? And they show it to a guy like you.
Well, they sell it to a developer.
Right.
And the developer doesn't want to know if there's any sinkholes on the property because they're going to have to do something about it before they can develop the land and turn it into homes. And unfortunately, the local government doesn't really want to know if there's sinkholes on that property either, because that's going to devalue their tax base.
Right, and they want those municipal tax dollars pouring in, sure.
Correct, absolutely. And so what I would really like to see is more regulation associated with pre-development of properties and really go out and do some significant studies associated with do geophysics, do more than two SPTs on a 200-acre piece of property to determine whether or not there are actually geologic hazards that exist. One of the things that's interesting to me is several years ago, Pasco County passed a special geologic hazards ordinance. And in it, it said that during development, the engineer of record must put a statement on the foundation plan that says that he has considered special geologic hazards. Well, I know from my business that I said, well, if you want me to put on that on the foundation plan, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do GPR, I'm going to do some SPT borings to figure out if there is actually geologic hazards present. My client said, thank you, I'm going to find another engineer that will sign off on it without having to spend any additional money.
And I know because my wife and I were in the process of building a home, and we had an engineer go out and test it for sinkhole activity before they poured the footers. And we got a phone call that they'd found an 8-foot cavern under what would be my living room. And, of course, the construction company asked us to sign a confidentiality agreement. They paid us all of our damages back, and then they turned around and built the house anyway and sold it. And I always wondered, you know, if they ever suffered from any problems associated with that. But I guess what you're saying, too, is the developers don't want to spend the additional $3,000 to $5,000, which is probably about all they have to spend, to drop a couple of borings on the property so that they could make appropriate representations to people like me who are coming along to buy the houses.
When I had State Farm insurance, and back in about 2005, I had the option to drop my sinkhole rider. My sinkhole rider was costing me about $1,800 a year.
Wow.
And I did a quick calculation, and for $2,500, I could do a sufficient geotechnical testing at the site, I could strengthen the foundation, and I could add proper joining in the building to make it more resistant to the effects of minor sinkhole activity.
Well, and I think to build on your suggestion and that on the focus must be on the time of construction, just because that's when it's so much more affordable to make the kinds of changes. I mean, if you were going to pour a foundation, but before that you put your underpins in, it would cost less. It's easier to do, obviously.
Correct.
You have more, like you said, you have more things in your toolbox that you can do pre-construction. And I think what I'm saying as a Florida taxpayer and as someone who has Citizens as insurance for one of my properties is that I'm looking to the state of Florida to help me find affordable, valuable property insurance. But at the same time, they need to do smart things like require new homes to be adequately reinforced to deal with some of the natural issues that we're dealing with, you know, be it storm activity like we've been seeing, either the direct hits from hurricanes or from tornadoes, that so many tornadoes that have come out of the storm that I've been hearing about, and also to deal with so many of the issues associated with sinkhole activity. Last question. What are we looking for when we're dealing with failed repairs? I'm going to give you about 20 seconds.
Sure. What's happened is that over the past couple of years, we've had the opportunity to go back and deal with literally hundreds of properties that have been repaired for sinkhole conditions previously, and we have found that in the vast majority of those cases, there have been problems associated with the repair, and oftentimes we've had to go back and repair it again. And I think it's important for the audience to understand that an average sinkhole repair is somewhere north of $100,000.
Wow. Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight to talk about these issues. I know that Ameritech Connection is a tremendous opportunity for Ameritech via Mike and Sharon to be reaching out to people in the community to talk about the things that are important. And for so many of the people that live in the Tampa Bay area, we live in a communal society where we're sharing resources. We live in a condo development. We're living there with a variety of people. We want to be able to protect our investment. And we also want to know that when we come into the state of Florida and we purchase property, especially newer property, the property is going to be properly built and it's going to be able to sustain the natural conditions that we find here in the state of Florida. I want to invite all of you to go to my website, CorlisBarfield.com, about more information about property insurance issues. We have Byron Anderson here. Thank you so much, Byron, for coming out.
Thank you, Ted.
And his website is SEIFlorida.com. And we enjoyed this opportunity to share this information, and we look forward to hearing from you in the future if you have questions about any of the issues that we presented tonight. Be well.
Talk Radio Network.
Ameritech Community Management is a local management company servicing the Tampa Bay area for over 20 years. We are proud of our company and continue to provide professional and courteous service to our clients. After 20 years, we still manage our very first community association. If you are in need of a top-notch community management team for your property, give us a call today, 727-726-8000. That's 727-726-8000. Or visit our website at ameritechcompanies.com.
Hey, you.
Who, me?
Not you, the hot one.
Hi, what can I do for you?
Aren't you that lady that's on that radio show called the Ameritech Connection?
Why, yes, I am. We're live every Thursday at 5 p.m. on Tan Talk Radio Network. Right, Mike?
That's right, Sharon. Live in a condo or homeowners association? Do you have issues? How about questions? We cover it all and more. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m.
What time again?
That's 5 p.m. every Thursday on Tan Talk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
Well, that wraps up our show for today. Sharon and I both would like to thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, without you, Ameritech has no connection.
That's so true. And we also appreciate all the feedback and all the listeners that take the time to call in and ask the questions. So don't forget, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m., it's the Ameritech Connection on the Tan Talk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
And if you're looking for a good property management company, look no further. Give us a call at Ameritech. I promise you, you won't be sorry. We would greatly appreciate the opportunity to become your next property management company.
So don't forget, every Thursday between 5 and 6 p.m., it's the Ameritech Connection.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk again next week.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City Tampa Bay WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
Recovery costs, bad flu season. I'm Barbara Cusack.